With the Democratic National Convention set to start next Monday in Boston, we turn to our regular political analysts for thoughts on the themes shaping up in the presidential campaign. E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and Brookings Institution, welcome back.
Thank you.
And David Brooks of the New York Times, thanks for coming in.
Good to be here.
There's a recurring refrain these days in the Kerry Edwards campaign. Let's listen to a little bit of tape from his speech last week before the NAACP convention.
We're going to listen about the values that matter most to the people of this country, values that you live by every single day: family, responsibility, inclusion, opportunity, fairness.
And the list goes on. David Brooks, values everywhere in the Kerry rhetoric these days. What do you think?
He left out motherhood, apple pie. I'm offended. Mothers across America are offended. This is sort of semi-vacuous. What happens is pollsters say, they ask this question, does John Kerry share your values? And it turns out Americans really want a candidate who shares their values. So what the candidates do is they go out and say, I share your values. We share your values. She shares your values. Instead of just going out and being themselves, and people can figure out whether the candidate shares their values or not.
Is this a way, do you think, EJ, of combating the Massachusetts liberal tag? You hear now about John Kerry making his way to the convention by blazing a trail, his campaign says, through cities that symbolize America's spirit and values.
Well, I'm a Massachusetts liberal, so I may not qualify to answer the question. I mean, the truth is this values attack on the Democratic Party goes all the way back at least to 1988. Lee Atwater, the late political operative, created a values campaign against Michael Dukakis. So, yes, it does stem from that. Kerry mixes what are seen as conservative values, family, responsibility, with liberal values, inclusion or fairness. For a lot of people, they don't look at those values as liberal or conservative. They identify with them all. And so I think this is an attempt to shut down one line of attack from George Bush to force him over to other issues.
Let's talk about the language from that we've been hearing lately from the president, references to compassion again, and another theme that's coming up again and again. Let's listen to part of the president's speech that he gave yesterday in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
The enemy declared war on us, and you just got to know, nobody wants to be the war president. I want to be the peace president.
EJ, at one point, being the war president was supposed to be working in the president's favor, and clearly not now.
I think he's going to soon ask for the endorsement of George McGovern to be the peace president. I mean, I think what this reflects is that the president knows he's in trouble with a very substantial middle part of the electorate that was willing to go along with the Iraq war, was never enthusiastic about it, looks at what's going on the ground, says, how long are we going to be involved in this? Will this ever work? Also, both parties are targeting women, married women, who have never been easy with war. And so I think there is a kind of narrow demographic appeal here and then a much broader appeal to the political center that Bush himself is trying to make.
David Brooks, how does President Bush make himself the candidate of peace?
Well, first of all, he's spending half of his speech on the war and security issues. So I don't think he's backing off from the war on terrorism. But I think what he's found is what anybody finds as they travel around the country. People are exhausted. I've spoken to a lot of Republicans recently and asked them how they feel the president is doing. Not many are that enthusiastic about him now. We've been through so much. Are we going to have another 4 years of going through this kind of level of excitement, trauma, energy? People don't want that. And so I think what the president is trying to say is, listen, I'm not Mr. Hyperactive here. I'm going to try to get us back to some sense of normalcy. But, you know, a war was declared on us and we're going to respond.
Let's talk about another issue making news this week, and that's the criminal investigation that's underway into the activities of Sandy Berger, the former national security advisor in the Clinton administration. He's now being investigated for taking classified documents out of the National Archives. He says it was inadvertent, but he has stepped down as an advisor to the Kerry campaign. E.J. Dionne, your thoughts on what's going on here?
Well, I guess I am most interested in why this leak. This has been under investigation for months and months and months and months. It is not that Sandy Berger took away documents that no one else could see. Those documents are still on file. And what was striking is to see all these Republicans yesterday, House and Senate, saying we want to investigate Sandy Berger, a Republican Congress that has never been willing to investigate very much about the ongoing Bush administration, put the name Clinton on anything, and Republicans are going to jump at it. I think this reflects a real concern about how the public is going to read the 9/11 Commission report released tomorrow, and it's a very good distraction for them.
David Brooks?
You're on the attack all the time. Sandy Berger did something wrong. It's a Republican conspiracy. No, listen, this is a bizarre thing that happened. Sandy Berger's a well-respected foreign policy expert. He's someone who a lot of Republicans agree with on principle. He's a pretty hawkish member of the Democratic Party. The evidence seems to suggest it's not inadvertent. The people at the research staff at this facility where they have the documents grew suspicious about him over a period of time. It's a tragic, it probably means he won't be in a Kerry administration if there is one.
He'd been talked about as a possible Secretary of State.
Absolutely. It's sort of a sad and tragic and very peculiar little episode.
Is this the kind of story that you think just percolates around Washington, dies in a few days, and doesn't affect the campaign much one way or the other?
Yeah, I do think that. Most people have never heard of Sandy Berger out in the country. Listen, this is a much bigger moment, this release of this 9/11 Commission report. What Sandy Berger did or did not do is trivial in comparison.
EJ?
Yeah, I doubt this story has a lot of legs at this point. I think this is a hard one to push, precisely because a lot of Republicans, as David suggested, had a lot of respect for Sandy Berger. It's not as if he's somebody they profoundly disagreed with. He supported the war in Iraq, for example, and did so pretty strongly.
Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Brooks, columnist with The New York Times, and E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Brookings Institution.